Today's daf is Pesachim Daf Gimel. Today's share is sponsored by the Graf family, in honor of me, but by the Graf family. And today's daf is again Pesachim Daf Gimel. Yesterday, the entire share was dedicated to translating one word, and that is the word Or. And we gave 11 rayas what the word Or means. The Gemara started out by saying that it is Machlokas Amoraim. It seems to be Machlokas Amoraim, whether it means daytime or nighttime. We had 11 rayas, 7 of them from Psukim, 4 of them from Mishnayos. Rayas number 8 and 10. Conclusively proved that the word Or means night, but the Gemara is not done yet. We have 4 more rayas that we're going to bring in today's daf from Mishnayos that Or means night, except in today's daf, all 4 of the rayas work. We're going to have 4 rayas that we accept all of them that Or means night, and then the rest of the daf is going to be dedicated to discussing the topic of speaking in a Lishna Ma'alya, in a clean and refined way, to avoid using negative words. The Gemara is going to mention 4 possible sources in the Torah where the Torah wrote extra letters, even though the Torah is normally very careful not to write extra letters, but there are extra letters written in the Torah in order to express itself in a more dignified and refined way. The Gemara is going to discuss how we balance the concern for speaking in a dignified way with the concern for brevity and with the concern for accurate terminology. And then at the end of the daf, we're going to have several stories, I think 5 stories, about people who were discovered to either have questionable or very negative lineage based on their undignified manner of speech, or people who were destined for greatness based on their dignified manner of speech, where you're able to tell a lot about a person by the way that they speak. So we left off at the 2 dots on Bezon Bez at the very bottom, last 3 words of the page, Mesive Marzutra. So again, this is Raya number 12 now for what the word Or means. We have a Mishnah, Hamapelis Or L'shmonim Ve'echad. If a woman has a miscarriage on the Or of the 81st day. Now, the basic background that Rashi gives us over here is that we know the pasuk tells us in Parshas Tazria that when a woman gives birth to a baby boy, she is tamei for 7 days, followed by 33 days where she is tahar. She gives birth to a baby girl, she is tamei for 14 days, followed by 66 days where she is tahar. We also know that after those 14 plus 66 days, let's say, for a baby girl, after day 80, she brings a karban on day 81. And that ends the whole birthing process for her. She brings the karban to get out of her tumah, she's completely tahar, after she brings the karban on day 81. Now, the halacha is, if sometime during those 80 days she has another birth, how's it possible to have another birth within 80 days? It's not a full pregnancy. No, she has a miscarriage. That counts as a birth also. If she has a miscarriage sometime within those 80 days, she only needs 1 karban. Normally, for a miscarriage, you need a karban. But and she would have to count the 80 days plus a karban. But when she has a miscarriage within those 80 days, she gets the original birth and the miscarriage are covered by a single karban. If she has a miscarriage, let's say on day 82, after she already brought her karban for the first leida, so obviously now she's going to need a new karban for this miscarriage. The machlokas that the Mishnah over here is quoting between Bisham and Besilel is, what if she has her miscarriage after the 80 days are over, but before she brings her karban on day 81? Is she now going to need a separate karban for this miscarriage? Or do we assume, since she hasn't yet brought her karban for the original birth, she's still covered with that single karban? So Hamapelis Or L'shmonim Ve'echad. If a woman miscarries on the Or of the 81st day, which means the night going into day 81, Beishamai poter mi karban, Beisilel mechayven. Beishamai says she's poter from a karban, Beisilel says she's chayven a karban. Amru Beisilel Beishamai, so Beisilel says to Beishamai, Maishna Or L'shmonim Ve'echad mi yom L'shmonim Ve'echad. Why should the night of day 81 be any different than the daytime of day 81? Im shiva lo l'tumah lo yishva lo l'karban. If they have the same halachic status in regards to how tameh she's going to be, then shouldn't they have the same halachic status in regards to the karban? Meaning, when she has that miscarriage on the night of the 81st day, her tumah clock starts again. She's going to have to go count 14 days plus 66 days, and that nighttime and daytime are equivalent. They're part of the same day. So why shouldn't it be the same? Why shouldn't the same be true regards to her status in regards to her chiv of bringing a karban? If a woman were to were to miscarry on the morning of the 81st day, she certainly would have to bring a separate carbon for that miscarriage. So if she miscarries on the night before, she should also have to bring a separate carbon for that miscarriage. So now, from the fact that Beis Hillel, in the way they express themselves to Beis Shammai, contrasts or to Yom, says, why should or be any different than Yom? Shmamina or to who? So don't we see that or means night? So Shmamina. The Gemara says, yeah, that's a good one. That's a good raya. So the first of our four rayas today works, that or in fact does mean night. There is a discussion, Rashi over here points out, as I mentioned before, that if a woman miscarries after 81 days are over, so then she's going to have to bring two separate karbanos, one for the original Leda and one for the miscarriage, and she's not yotze with a single karban. Rashi writes, she brings the karbanos after the Yemei Tara of the Leda Shnia, that after she already finishes the full 80 days of the second Leda of the miscarriage, then she brings both karbanos. So the Rosh Yosef just wonders, why does she have to wait to bring her first karban till after the Yemei Tara of the second Leda? Can't she bring the first karban right away and wait for the end of the Yemei Tara of the second Leda to bring the second karban? What delays the first karban? So this is in fact the Machlokas Rambam and the Ravid, whether she has to wait till after the Yemei Tara of the second Leda. The Rambam in the first parak of Mechusrei Kapara writes, Im hivir karbana toch yimei melos lo yotzeis. If she brings her karban within the 80-day period, she's not yotzei. Afilu hivia al vlados harishonim betoch yimei melos shel vlad zeh lo yotzeis. The Rambam says clearly, even if she brings the karban for the first baby within the 80 days that you're counting for the second baby, she is not yotzei. And the Ravid says, I don't know why that would be the case. Why should it be any different than a korban chatas that you bring for eating chalev, reading dam, where a tamei person is absolutely permitted to send their korban to the Beis HaMikdash and their korban will count for them? Why should this be any different? Why should they not be able to bring their korban? So the Kesef Mishnah explains the Shita Sarambam that Tumas Yoledes is different than other Tumos. That the Torah is dafka. Why do you think the Torah has her wait till after the 80 days are over to bring the korban? Because the Torah is dafka makbid that the whole Tumah process should be done by the time this carbon is brought. So ain't a chinami. Normally a tamei person could send the carbon chatas for eating chalev, for eating dam. That's fine, because we don't have any indication that the Torah cares whether the owner of the carbon is tamei. But the whole idea of bringing a carbon of Tumas Leda after the 80 days are over is an indication that the Torah doesn't want the woman with Tumas Leda to be sending carbon. That is the Shitas HaRambam. And the Ravid obviously holds this just like any other tamei person who's allowed to send their carbon. Okay, that was all Raya number one. Raya number two now, or really Raya number 13, I guess. Mesve, Yachli he nechal or lishlishi, I might think that a carbon shlamim, when we say in Karbanos every morning, that a carbon shlamim is normally eaten for 2 days and one night, which means today is Sunday, if I bring my carbon shlamim today, I'm allowed to eat the carbon shlamim today, Sunday day, Sunday night, and Monday day. So I might have thought I could eat it Monday night also, that it could be eaten or l'shlishi, v'dinu, and the truth is it makes logical sense. Zvachim ne'achalim liyom echad, u'shlam ne'achalim l'shnei yamim. A carbon todah gets eaten for 1 day, carbon shlam gets eaten for 2 days. So mala halon laila achar ayom afkan laila achar ayom. When we say a carbon toda could be eaten for 1 day, what does it mean 1 day? It means if I bring a carbon toda today on Sunday, I'm allowed to eat it Sunday and Sunday night. So it's logical to assume that when you tell me a carbon shlam could be eaten for 2 days, it would mean I'm allowed to eat it Sunday and Sunday night and Monday night. So Monday night would be included. The laila's achar ayom. This is the application of the principle that even though in the Jewish calendar the Yom is always Halech Achar Laila, we always start the day by nighttime. Shabbos starts at night, Yontif starts at night, the day of the month always starts at night, Rosh Chodesh starts at night, but when it comes to Kachim, it's Halayla Halech Achar Yom. The day starts in the morning. That's the Halacha by Achilas Karbanos. When we're told that you can eat a carbon for 1 day, it doesn't mean one calendar day on the Jewish calendar. It starts in the morning, in the daytime, when you bring the carbon, and then the night follows. So it's logical to assume that the carbon shlamim that I bring today, I should be allowed to eat not just today and tonight and tonight and tomorrow day, but also tomorrow night. So Tamil Omer, that's why the pasuk says, "Bi yom zivchachem yechel umi macharas va nosar ad yom." As the pasuk tells us that you should eat it on the day that you bring the carbon, and then whatever left over ad yom, the end of the pasuk is ad yom ashlishi, on the till the third day. But sorry, if that's what you burn, whatever's left over till the third day. But we darsh, and the pasuk is telling me that I can only eat it while it's still daytime, but I cannot eat it in the nighttime following the second day. So I might think, oh good, okay, if I can only eat it today, tonight, and tomorrow day, I should burn it right away when the sun sets tomorrow night, or I'd say so, tomorrow night I should burn it immediately. Vidinu, and it's logical to assume that as soon as I can no longer eat it, I should have to burn it. Because vachem ne'achalim liyom v'layla echad, u'shlam ne'achalim. A carbon todah, let's say, is eaten for one day and one night. Carbon shlam is eaten for 2 days and one night. So mala halon, take of la'achilas reifa. Avkan, take of la'achilas reifa. Just like by the carbon todah, the halach is, when do I burn it? As soon as that day and night are over. The second morning is when I burn it. Take of la'achilas reifa. As soon as I'm no longer allowed to eat it, you burn it. So I would think the same is true by a carbon shlamim. I'm allowed to eat it today, tonight, tomorrow day. So it's logical to assume, when should I burn it? Tomorrow night. So Talmud Omer, that's why the pasuk has to tell me no. Vanosom ribasra zevach bayom ashlishi ba'eshi sarev. That when do I burn the carbon shlamim? On Tuesday morning. Not tomorrow night, not Monday night. Bayom atasore viatasorfo balayla. You burn it only during the daytime. You cannot burn it at the nighttime. So there is this nighttime period, tomorrow night, let's say, it would be in limbo. I wouldn't be allowed to eat it, but I also cannot yet burn it. The Chiv Sreifa is only in the morning. But bottom line is, why do we quote this entire conversation? Because the Mishnah used the word or. Midkamer yeinechal or l'shlishi, from the fact that the Mishnah says, I might think that you could eat the carbon on the or of the third day. So the term or, alma or urtuhu. So we see that the term or must mean nighttime. So shmamina, that's in fact a good raya. The word or means nighttime. So again, both of our rayas so far today worked. Tashima, now raya number three, that the word or means nighttime. Or shel Yom Kippurim, mispal sheva umisvada. On the or of Yom Kippur, you should say seven brachos in your Shemona Esrei and include vidui in the Shemona Esrei. Shachris, in the morning on the Shachris of Yom Kippur, mispal sheva umisvada. Seven brachos plus vidui. B'musuf, mispal sheva umisvada. Musuf of Yom Kippur, seven brachos and vidui. B'mincha, mispal sheva umisvada. Mincha, seven brachos and vidui. B'arvis, mispal me'ein Shemona Asar. On Mariv of Motzai Yom HaKippurim, we daven similar to 18 brachos, not the full 18 brachos, but something that's an abridged version of each of the 18 brachos. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Omer Mishum Avosav Mispal Shmona Asar Shleimos. That Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel says in the name of his fathers that we daven 18 full brachos, meaning Motzei Yom Kippur, the regular full normal Shmona Esrei. Min Reishet Tzarech Lomer Havdalah B'Chonei Nadas. Why do we daven the regular full Shmona Esrei? Because we have to say Havdalah in Shmona Esrei. We have to say Havdalah in the bracha of Chonei Nadas. And if you just get davening an abridged version, where are you going to say Havdalah? So in order to stick Havdalah in there, we need to say the regular Shmona Esrei. But why are we quoting this whole Mishnah? Because the Mishnah tells us about all the different times on Yom Kippur. There's Or, there's Shachris, there's Musaf, there's Mincha, right? So what must Or mean? Or must mean the Alma Or Urtu, must mean the night that Yom Kippur starts. So Shema Mina, that in fact is a good Raya as well. Now there is a Gemara in Maseches Brachos and Daf Chav Tes, where the Gemara tells us from Nachum Rav Shmuel says, Kol Hashana Kula Mispal Adam Havinenu. A person could daven in a bridged version of Shemoneh Esrei Havinenu throughout the year, except for Motzai Shabbos and Motzai Yom Tov. Why? Because Motzai Shabbos, Motzai Yom Tov, you have to say Havdalah. So when you say Havdalah, it needs to be in the actual bracha of Chonei Nadas. But the Gemara asks over there, on that the Marzutra over there asks, wait a second, why can't you just include Havdalah in the abridged version the same way we include every other bracha in the abridged version? Say a little passage about Havdalah somewhere in the Havinenu. And the Gemara leaves that as a kasha. Doesn't really answer that question. So the Rishonim all right, the Ramban, the Rashba say l'chora, that l'chora is a good kasha on Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel also. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel over here says that Dafkan Motzoy Yom Kippur, we should have an 18 full brachos because you need Avdallah. When the Gemara tried to say that about Motzoy Shabbos and Motzoy Yom Tov and Maseches Brachos, we said, what are you talking about? Just say Avdallah in the abridged version also. Why doesn't the Gemara ask the same kasha on Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel about Motzoy Yom HaKippurim? So he said, maybe it's only talking about someone who makes this bracha throughout the whole year, that he might as well just add in the Havdalah in the regular bracha. That's what the Gemara was talking about in Maseches Brachos. If you're normally Daven Avinenu, no reason to do different on Motzai Shabbos, Motzai Yom Tov, you can throw in the Havdalah. But someone who the whole year davens 18 regular full brachos, if he tries to throw in the Havdalah in Avinenu, he's likely going to become confused by that, and it's going to mess up his Shemona Esrei, and that's why the Gemara doesn't ask that kasha. The Gemara assumes over here we're talking about a guy who normally davens Shemona Esrei, and the one time he wants to daven in a bridge version because he's hungry is Motzai Yom HaKippurim. So when he does that, he's going to get confused if he tries to add in Havdalah. So that's maybe why the Ritva just adds Dafka, because he's hungry, he's going to get confused. Maybe we have a special concern on Motzai Yom HaKippurim because the person is Mu'una, that he's going to get confused from that. The Talmid Rabbeinu Yonah says in the name of Rabbeinu Yonah that we don't mention Havdalah and Havinenu, because how does Havinenu work? It's one big bracha that includes the themes of all of the other brachas of Shemona Esrei. So if you were to add in a phrase about Havdalah, it would give the impression that Havdalah is just like one of the other brachos, that it doesn't normally get included in Chonen Adas, that it's its own bracha. That's why it gets its own phrase, like every other bracha in Shemona Esrei gets its own phrase in Havinenu. That's what they write in the name of Rabbeinu Yonah, why you have to, if you're going to say Havdalah, it has to be as part of Shemona Esrei full brachos, and you include it in Chonen Adas. Otherwise, it gives the wrong impression. Okay, now the Gemara says, Tashma, a final raya. The Tani Debe Shmuel, a final raya about the word or. The Tani Debe Shmuel, we taught in the Braisa, Lele Arba Asar, Botkin Asachametz La'or Haner. The Braisa, in general, the role of Braisos is whatever the Mishnah says, the Braisa gives another detail, a little more elaboration. Not much, just a little bit more that helps us clarify things. So this is the Braisa that works off of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, we do Bedikas Chametz on the Or Le'arba Asar. This Braisa wants to tell us the same halacha. So how does this Braisa express the halacha? Lele Arba Asar, Botkin Asachametz La'or Haner. Alma or Ortuhu. So we see pretty clearly that or means night, because it translates the word or in our Mishnah as lele, as night. So that's as clear as you could possibly have it, that the word or obviously means night. So all four of the rayas from today work. Now the obvious kasha is, a daf and a half later, if the Gemara had this brisa in their back pocket, why did we need to go through all the seven psukim and seven other Mishnah? Did we really need it? It's translating the word or, and it calls it Lila, so we really needed to away. But this is the style of the Talmud Bavli, Lahagdil Torah Lahadir. The Talmud Bavli always goes on tangents, and it gives us such an enriching experience where we learned all about Tumen Tara when one was Mapil, we learned all about Kadshim, we learned about the Minag Darach Eretz of Yilol Mietzi Adam B'chitov. We learned about so many different themes and so many different things over the last daf and a half just by working on the word Ar. So the Gemara waited to bring this the final Raya till we got through all of the other things. So Ella, at the end of the day, remember how the Gemara started. The Gemara started right after the Mishnah saying, Kasalka Daitach. We originally thought that the guy who says that or means daytime literally means daytime, and the one who says it means nighttime literally means nighttime. Now we're saying, yeah, that was a Havamina, but that's not really right. Ella Bein Rav Huna Ubein Rav Yehuda Dukuli Alma or Ortuhu. Everyone holds that or means nighttime. No one holds that or means daytime. Below Peligi and Rav Huna, Rav Yehuda, that we had in the Beis Amaral, for not arguing. Marki Asrei, Marki Asrei. Each one is calling it whatever they called it in his location. Ba Asrei Rav Huna Kari Naghi, Uba Asrei Rav Yehuda Kari Lele. In Rav Huna's place, they would call nighttime Naghi, and Rav Yehuda's place, they would call it Lele. So when the Gemara started off on Beis Amaral, said, Mai or, what's or? They both gave the same answer. They both said night. It's just in Rav Huna's language, Nagi means night. In Rav Yehuda's language, Leili means night. But they were just expressing themselves in their own normal language. So says the Gemara, okay, great. But if you were to ask anyone who has any basic knowledge of the Hebrew language, how do you say night in Hebrew? So everyone would tell you, night means Laila, Leil. That's night. Night, definitely you wouldn't use the word R. So we have a perfectly good word in the Hebrew language to express night. Why did the Mishnah, of all the words to choose to express that you're supposed to do B'dikas Chametz on the night of the 14th, use the word R just to confuse us and send us on this wild goose chase for a daf and a half to try to figure out what the word R means? V'tana didan, my time, alokatani lele. Why didn't our Tana just tell us the word lele? Just say Laila, and I'll know exactly what it is. Says the Gemara, Lishnama al Yehudinakat. Because our Tana wants to speak in a more refined way, and it's a more upbeat, cheerful kind of language to use a word like R rather than to use a gloomy word like Laila, like night. It's not that it's a curse word, it's not that it's a bad word, but it's just a less cheerful way of speaking. So we always try to speak, the Tana is trying to teach us that we always try to speak in the nicest way possible. Look at Rabbi Shimon Levi, just like Rabbi Shimon Levi taught. Rabbi Shimon Levi, Olam al Yotzi Adam Davar Maguna Mipiv. A person shouldn't have something that's unrefined come out of his mouth. Sharei Ike Makosuv Shmona Osios V'Lahotzi Davar Maguna Mipiv. The Torah goes 8 letters out of its way just to avoid saying something unrefined. Shenamar, because the pasuk tells us, where do we find it goes 8 letters out of its way? In Parshas Noach. The pasuk tells us in Parshas Noach, Mina Behema HaTahora, from the kosher animals, Umina Behema, it should have said HaTameya, right? What does it say, Umina Behema? Asher Einena Tahora. Instead of saying Tameya, it says Asher Einena Tahora. Why all those extra letters? To tell us that you should speak in a more refined way. It's more refined to say it's Nish Tahor, it's not Tahor, than it is to say that it's Tameh. I heard Rabbi Fran say once that Rav Pam used to say about his mother, that his mother never said the word sheker. She couldn't say the word sheker. It was a dirty word to her. So she would say das Nish Demes. That's the closest she could come. That's it when you speak in that kind of way. So you have a child like Rav Pam. It's not a guarantee, but yeah, you speak in that kind of way, and you have it reflects very well on a person when a person speaks in that kind of language. Rav Papa Amar Teisha. Rav Papa says no, it goes 9 letters out of its way. Shenemar Kiyeh B'cha Ish Asher Lo Yihi Etohar Mikra Laila. A man experiences Tumah at night. He experiences Tumas Keri at night. How does it describe it? Not as Tumah, but as Asher Lo Yihi Etohar Mikra Laila. Ravina Amar Eser. Ravina says no, it's really 10 extra letters because Vav De Tohar. It's Tar is written with a Vav, so it's an extra letter there. Ravacha Bar Yaakov Amar Sheshesre, that the Torah actually goes 16 letters out of its way. Shenemar ki amar mikrehu bilti tahor hu ki lo tahor. So that's 16 letters extra that the Torah has just to avoid saying the word Tameh. Now Rashi over here writes that when the Gemara does not mean to say that Laila is a Davar Maguna, that it's a disgusting word or a bad word to say Laila, because if that were the case, then how did the Tana de Beis Shmuel, our final Raya of what Or meant, how did he say Lele Arbas or both Ginas HaChametz? So obviously it's not a bad word, it's just that it's teaching us a lesson that we should always try to use a Lashon Sach V'Naki, the most refined Lashon possible. The Bala Maor says that why is it Dafka that the Tana de Beis Shmuel would say Laila and our Mishnah says Or? He says the sensitivity to using a refined language is heightened when it's an opening statement. So we're starting a Masechta. You don't want to start a Masechta. It's much the way we end a Masechta. Whenever we end a Masechta, we could be talking about the most dreary, dreadful, horrible things. So what do? We say, we just add in a cheerful statement that has absolutely nothing to do with it. I mean, at the end of Masechta's Makos, we talk about the Churban, and so we just add in something cheerful at the end in order to make it more positive. So Balmar says that's what we do at the beginning also, in terms of the Lashon that we use. We don't want to start a Masechta with the word Laila. That's the extra sensitivity. The Ravid on the Asagos on the Balmar says he doesn't understand what the Balmar is talking about. It's not only at the beginning of Masechta that we find this. Mapelos Or L'Shmona Ve'echad is not at the beginning of Masechta. The Achilas Karban Shlomim Or L'Shlishi is not at the beginning of the Masechta. All these cases are not at the beginning. It's just the only one is the Pesachim one. So he says no. It's only, it says the Ravid, why do we have to use the word R? Ar doesn't mean night, really. What Ar means is, what Ar mean, why would the word Ar mean night? Ar means light, right? So why would that word be the word that expresses night? What does the Gemara mean when it says that Ar means night? It means that Ar is used to describe the beginning of the night, where there's still some light in the sky. We would never use Ar to describe the middle of the night. And the Ravid goes through one by one. Masin Masuos La'or Iburo, that we lift up the torches on the Ar Iburo. When do we lift up the torches? Dafka at the beginning of the night. Both Ginez, Ar Larbas are both Ginez Chametz. When do we do B'dikas Chametz? As early in the night as possible, right after Tzeisa Kochavim. In all of the cases where we use the term Ar, we're trying to express that it's even at the beginning of the night. Or Yom HaKippur Mispal Sheva Misvada, to teach us that don't delay in the vidui, that you want the whole day to be filled with vidui from beginning to end. So as soon as it becomes nighttime, you already start with the vidui. In every single case, the Ravid says, it's all about expressing that it's the beginning of the night. So the poskim aren't sure what the Ravid means in terms of halach l'maisa, in terms of bedikas chametz. So what does that mean? That we do it at Or. Does that mean we do it before Tzeis HaKochavim, when it's still light outside, and during Ben HaShemashos, or does it mean we do it right after Tzeis HaKochavim? So that's Machlokas HaPoskim. Rabbi Yeruchim understands the Ravid that it's Samuch La'ar, meaning Samuch L'Knisas HaLaila. Primogadim understands that means Ben HaShemashos. Tzlach says, no, it means right after Tzeis HaKochavim, not during Ben HaShemashos. You're still supposed to do B'dikas Chametz right after Tzeis HaKochavim. The Tzlach just points out that the Ravid is so clearly correct based on the Gemara that we said before. What do we say? That the kuli amalo pligi, that Or means orta, that Or means night, right? It's just marki asrei, marki asrei. In Rav Huna's place, they called nighttime nagi, and in Rav Yehuda's place, they called it leili. So that's a very strange thing, that why does the Gemara have to tell me that in Rav Yehuda's place, they called nighttime leili? Everywhere they call nighttime, meaning the Chiddush is that in Rav Huna's place they would call it Nagi, right? Why would they, and also in Rav Yehuda's place they called it Leili. So says the Tzlach, no, what it's telling us is, like the Ravid, that the time period that we're talking about is not the middle of the night. We're talking about at the very beginning of the night, where it's sort of on the border between night and day. So just like it's a Chiddush to tell me that in Rav Huna's place they called that Nagi, it's an equal Chiddush to tell me that in Rav Yehuda's place they called that Leili. So that's the Tzlach says, it's Mukhrach, like the Shitas HaRavid. Okay, says the Gemara Vaitin. Tanya Debe Rabbi Shmuel, La'olim Yisafar Adam Lashon Nekia. Person should always speak in a clean language. Sharei bezav karu merkav will be isho karu moshav. When a person is a zav or a zava, has that status of tumah, a zav or a zava, things that they sit on become tame. But the way we describe the sitting of a man and the way we describe the sitting of a woman are different. By a man, we call it merkav, as if he's riding, which indicates that legs are apart, just like when you ride on an animal, you have one leg on each side of the animal. And by a woman, it doesn't describe it that way, because that's not a tsnua way for a woman to sit. So we don't even use that word to describe how the woman sits on something. Rather, we use the word moshav. Moshav implies sitting nicely, legs crossed, right, sitting in a more tsunua way. Va'omer v'tivchar lashon arumim, va'omer v'da'as sifsei bar milalo. Sifsei bar milalo. So we have all these psukim that indicate that you're supposed to speak in a clear, nice way. My v'omer, why do I need all these psukim? V'chi te'mahani mili b'dar raisa, if you would think that, yeah, who has to speak in a clear and clean language? The Torah speaks in a clear and clean language. That's why we have all these psukim with extra letters. Aval b'drabbanan lo, but you might think the rabbanan don't have to speak that way. Tashma v'yomer v'tivcha lashon arumin. That's why we have that pasuk that tells me v'tivcha lashon arumin, that even rabbanan have to speak that way. V'chite mahani mili b'drabbanan aval b'mili the alma lo. And if you're going to say, yeah, that's in the base medrash, we're talking in rabbinic language, we're talking about in yanim of Torah, so we should speak in a clear and refined and clean way. But mili di alma, yistam, talking about other things. So I would think you don't have to speak that way. Va'omer, that's why we have another pasuk. V'das vasai bar milalo, that a person's lips should always speak a bar milelu, should always speak in the most clear and clean way. So, frankly, Gemara, wait a second. What did we just say? That by a woman, we describe it as moshav and not merkav, because it's not nice, it's not refined to describe a woman as being rochev, right? So, ask the Gemara, we have all the time where the Tanakh describes a woman as being rochev. Ubi isha loksiv ba merkav. What, you think by a woman, he never says the word merkav? Vaksiv, atakam rivkav na aroseha. Vatir kavna ala gamalin. Rivka and her helpers got up and rode on the camels. Vatir kavna. So says Gemara, Hasa mishum biyasusa de gamalim orchihi. When the Torah wants to describe that a person was riding in a way where they were hanging on tight to an animal because they were terrified, so for the sake of accuracy, we'll describe it as rochev even by a woman. But stam, when we talk about a woman sitting, we wouldn't say rochev. So when she's very fearful of something, so I don't know if you ever rode on a camel. I remember when I was in Camp Stei Chemet, we went on riding on camels. It was terrifying. Camels are very, very high. They're very, very tall. So it's understandable. Rivka and her naroseha were afraid when they were riding on a camel. So because of that, they describe it as rochev. I vaksiv vayikach Moshe es ishto ve'esbanav vayarkive malach hamor. Moshe took his wife and his sons and rode them on a chamor. So it says, and a chamor is not so scary. A chamor is not a camel. It's a donkey. It's very low. It's not scary at all. So hasam yishum banav urchehu. No, because over there, it's not just Sipora that was writing, it was the boys also. So because of the boys, it describes them all as very archivim. I vaksiv vihi rocheves alachamar, when the Navi describes Basheva, when she meets David, it says that she's riding alachamar. So hasumishum biasusa delele. Over there, it's because of the fear of nighttime that she was riding that way. Orchu, so therefore it's normal to call it rochev. Vibayasema, or another possibility of why it says why it says rochev, even though it's about a woman, mishum biyasuse delele, because she was mishum biyasuse delele leka, mishum biyasuse de David ika. It wasn't a fear of nighttime; it was a fear of David Amelech that she had, because he was the Melech. V'ibayaseima biyasuse de David nami leka, mishum biyasuse de har ika. That it's not a fear of David, but rather it's a fear of riding up a mountainside that could be very scary. So ubaraisa milok siftame. So good. We finished with the word rochev now. So now the Gemara says we just went through all these different psukim before that had 8 extra letters, 9 extra letters, 10 extra letters, 16 extra letters, all to avoid saying the word tame. We just didn't want to say the word tame. So says the Gemara, ubaraisa milok siftame. Does it really never say the word tame in the Torah? It says it all over the Torah. So that can't be that the word tame is a dirty word. So now the Gemara says, yes, it's true we try to speak in a clean language, but we have to balance it with other considerations as well. And the other considerations as follows. Whenever chiyadadininu, whenever the length of the words we're going to use are the same, we always use a clean language. But if the options are to either say more in a clean language or say it in a more brief way in a less clean language, we go with brevity over cleanliness of language. Like Rav Huna Amar Rav says, a person should always teach his talmidim in the briefest possible way. A person should give a halacha shir in 10 minutes, let's say, if you only review in 5 minutes. You try to give everything in a quick, brief, possible way. But whenever the options are the same, you can go one way or the other, then you should speak in a more dignified way. But Rocheves and Yosheves take up the same amount of letters, and still it says Rocheves. So it says Rocheves, it says Rocheves, but without the Vav. So therefore, Rocheves is shorter than Yosheves, which obviously leads all the Rishonim and Achronim to ask the Kasha. You could have also said Yosheves without the Vav. So there's some reason why we couldn't have, obviously, why we couldn't have said Yosheves without the Vav, but you could have said Rocheves without the Vav. The Kasha is better than all the answers. So, good. Now the rest of the daf, we go through all of the different stories of people who we were able to tell a lot about them based on the way that they spoke. Either they spoke specifically in a dignified way or in a specifically undignified way where we were able to see a lot about them. Hanu trei talmid davyasu kamed rav. There were two talmidim that were sitting in front of Rav and they were each commenting on the shir. One said this shear was like a tired pig. higdim esanka, that it was like a tired goat. Velo ishtai rav bahadi daheich. Didn't sound like either one was complimenting the shear, but the guy who described it as a davaracha, the guy who described it as a pig, because he used such unrefined language to speak about a pig, davaracha is a terminology that Chazal use. It's a way of saying the unmentionable, something that you can't, like we have in Yiddish, people say yenamachla. They don't want to say something that's so terrible, so they just refer to it with davaracha. So sometimes it refers to all sorts of unclean things. Sometimes it refers to a pig, sometimes it refers to Tashma Shamita, sometimes it refers to the Evrazakus, whatever, Davar Acher, it's something else, it's something, Avodah Zarah it's referred to, it refers to all sorts of different things that are unmentionable, that we're not supposed to talk about. So Rav wouldn't talk to that Talmud, because he found him to be inappropriate in the way that he expressed himself. Good. Next story. Hanu trei talmidim dav yasu kamei de Hillel. There were two talmidim that were sitting in front of Hillel. V'chad minai Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. One of them turned out to be Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, but this is when he was much younger. V'amila kamei de Rebbe v'chad minai Rabbi Yochanan. Some say the story was not with Hillel and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. It was two talmidim in front of Rebbe, and one of them was Rabbi Yochanan. Chad Omar, but of these two talmidim, one of the talmidim said, "Mivnei ma botzrin betara vein moskin betara." Why is it that when we are botzer anavim, that when we cut grapes, we make sure to put them into a tahar kli, but when we cut olives off of the tree, we're not so careful to put it into a tahar kli. V'chad Amar, and the other one asked, "Mipnei ma botzrin betara umoskin betuma." He didn't say, why are we not mosik betara? He said, why is it that we're botzer, we cut grapes and we put it in a tahar kli, and we cut olives and we put it in a tame kli? So that was the way he expressed himself. So Amar, the Rebbe said, "Muftach ani bazeh shemara hara b'Yisrael." That I'm certain about this one, the one who spoke in the more refined way. Now the other guy didn't do anything wrong. He just said tuma instead of that. The Torah says the word tuma all the time. But the one that was so careful to speak in such a refined language, he said, if he has such sensitivity to the language, I'm certain that he's going to be a mora hara b'Yisrael. There's going to be a big posek in Klal Yisrael. V'loha yam watim acha hara hara b'Yisrael. And it wasn't long till he grew up to be either Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai or Rabbi Yochanan, whichever version of the story is true. He became a great mora hara b'Yisrael. It is interesting that of all of the predictions you would make about someone who speaks in such a refined language, I would say he's going to be a mashkiach in a yeshiva. You know, he's going to be the bal musar. He's going to be a tzaddik. Whenever you see in the frum publications, so every Rosh Shiva is Harav Agon, and every Mashkiach is Harav HaTzadik, right? So that's Aragon HaTzadik, or something like that. The Mashkiach is the Tzadik, so I would think he'd say he's the Tzadikal type. He's not the, he's going to be the Mora Hora, the soul. What does Mora Hora have to do with the fact that he speaks Belishan and Nakia, that he speaks in, so apparently a very important part of being Mora Hora is clarity of expression, is knowing how to express yourself properly. He showed the ability to choose just the right words to use. The Gemara at the beginning of Masechta Sanhedrin, when it describes how we got what we call smicha, heter hora'a, when does somebody, why do we require before a person paskin shailas, that he gets a heter to paskin shailas from his Rebbe, that someone's got it. So the Gemara says, because there was a guy that was going around, and he was paskin shailas accurately, but no one understood what he was talking about. People thought that he said, mei bitsayim are not makshil the kabal tumah, that swamp waters are not makshil the kabal tumah. What he really said was mei beitzim, was that egg yolks are not makshir lekabel tuma, but he couldn't express himself properly, and people didn't understand. So they made a rule then that in order to paskin a shayla, you have to be able to be tested that you're able to express yourself properly. So maybe that's the point, that he was a mora ra because of his ability to express himself in the right way. Third story. Hanu tosa kani. There were three kohanim. Chad amar lehu higiani kipul. They each got their portion of the lechem apanim. One of them said, I got the size of a bean. V'chad amar higiani kizayis. One says, I got the size of a zayis. V'chad amar higiani kizan of halta. One says, I got the size of a piece of bread the size of the tail of a weasel. So bat goachrav, they checked into the last guy who described the lechem kodshim as the tail of a weasel. Umatzubo shemetz psul. And they found the shemetz psul in his lineage. that he's a chalal. He's not a real kohen. I vain both kinyan mizbeach lemaila. But I thought once a kohen is already doing the avoda and he's already accepted as a kohen, you stop looking into his lineage. That's not a right. It's like looking into a shidduch. When do you look into the shidduch? Beforehand, after they're married, you stop looking into the shidduch. So once the kohen is ready being offered by the mizbeach, so it's too late. So lo teim shemetz psul eleim shachetz psul. No, it's not just that they found a psul kuna in his family, but rather they found they found shachetz psul. He himself was an inappropriate person. Rashi says he was a gas ruach, he was a balgaiva, he was just an inappropriate person. Or others say, no, it's true, you stop looking into the shidduch after you get married, until the guy starts doing things that make you say, wait a second, how did we not know about this? Is there a history of this? And then you look into it. This guy brought it on himself. He spoke in such a way that it caused us to look into it. Again, all the achronim are bothered. How could you have that the three different kohanim get three different sized portions of the lechem apanim? That's not fair. Shouldn't they divide it evenly? So some suggest that who says they all got it at the same time? Maybe they were from different mishpachos. They were from different mishmaros of kohuna. One got 1 week. One got the next week. So the one from the larger mishmar got a smaller portion. The one from the smaller mishmar got a larger portion. Others say no. That's the whole point. They all got the same size. This shows an attitude. Sometimes people can get something and they're very grateful for what they have. So they say, ah, higiani kezayis. It wasn't anywhere near a kezayis. But to me, this is like a kezayis. It's such a chash of a thing. And the other guy, okay, it's kapul. That's what it actually is. He's describing what. And the other one is so disgusted by it, he calls it a zanav al tam. Maybe they actually did get the same size. Is it okay to get a size less than a kezayis? By achilas kachim in general, if there's a mitzvah sachila, normally the mitzvah sachila is to eat a kezayis. There's a Beis Halevi, a beautiful Beis Halevi, where he explains that by achilas kachim, the mitzvah is not really a mitzvah achila per se. By achilas kachim, the mitzvah is sheyehei ne'echal, that the kachim should be eaten. But there's no mitzvah to do a maisa achila on the kachim. So if a person, if the karban is divided into a million pieces and everyone gets a little bit and the whole thing gets consumed, you did the mitzvah perfectly. That's perfectly fine. The only kachim, the only karban that's different, that doesn't have that rule, is Karban Pesach. Karban Pesach, in addition to the mitzvah that you shouldn't have no sar, that shiei nechal, she get consumed, there's also a mitzvah sachila, everybody needs to have a kezayis. But it's perfectly fine by the lechem apanim for each person to get less than a kezayis, because the point is it just needs to be consumed by being ingested by human beings. But it does not have to be a kezayis at a time. Next story. Ha'u arma, there was a non-Jew. He used to enjoy going and bringing a Karban Pesach every year in Yerushalayim. There are all sorts of people who have crazy ideas of what they want to do. So a non-Jew decided he wants to bring a Karban Pesach. So that was his shtick. So Amar Ksiv called Ben Echel Lo Yochal Bo. So then he would taunt the Jewish community afterwards from where he was from. He would say, you know, it says in the Torah that I'm not allowed to eat from this Karban. Kol Ara Lo Yochal Bo, and that anyone who doesn't have a Bris Milah can't eat from it. And guess what? I'm a Goy, I'm an Orel. V'ana Haka Achil Lami Shufri Shufri. And I eat the best, most delicious Karban Pesach every year. So Amar Le Rabbi Dibam Beseira. Rabbi Dibam Beseira said to him, Mika Safalach Me'alia? Really? You eat the best part? Do they give you the nice fatty tail of the Karban? So Amar Le, lo. He says, no, they never gave me that part. So he says, obviously they're on to you. They know what you are. Go see. Next time you go bring the Karban Pesach, ask them to feed you from the fatty tail and see if they really give it to you. So next time he brought his Karban Pesach, he said, give me the fatty tail. I want to eat that. So they said to him, what are you talking about? The fatty tail gets burnt on the Mizbeach. That doesn't go to the Bailim. What a strange request. Who told you to request that? Who told you to ask for the fatty tail? So Amruluhu, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira Amru, he says, a very big rabbi told me, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira told me. So don't tell me that it gets burnt on the Mizbeach. So my had to come on. So the Kohanim said, no, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira knows how to learn. How could it be that he told this guy to ask for the fatty tail? What's going on over here? So Batku Basrei, so they looked into it, Vashkuchu Darmohu, and they found that he was Taka, a non-Jew, v'katluhu, so they killed him. Shalchu le Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, and they sent a message to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. Shalem lach Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, da'at bin tzivnu mutzadaska prusu b'yushlayim. Shalom aleichem Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, you're so wonderful, you're all the way in tzivn, and you spread your trap all the way to Yerushalayim, that you're able to ensnare this guy in your trap all the way in Yerushalayim. So a couple of things. First of all, is the guy chayev misa? for doing that. He's a bad guy. Terrible thing to do. Because he chayiv misa. So okay, that's a kasha number one. Kasha number two, more troubling, that the Rishonim are bothered by, is Rabbi Yehuda ben Seira Shkayach. He's such a wonderful guy. You're all the way in a tzivin on Pesach when the whole Jewish people came to Yerushalayim to bring the Korban Pesach. And you're all the way in a tzivin and you're able to trap this guy. Why didn't Rabbi Yehuda ben Seira come to Yerushalayim to be all regal to bring his Korban Pesach? So Tosus asked the kasha, why wasn't Rabbi Yehuda ben Seira all the regal? So Tosus says, he wasn't all the regal because he was a chale, he was a lokarka. There are all sorts of heterim that you have for aliyah leregel. So all the achronim ask the kasha. Great, that explains why. Let's say he ain lo karka, someone who doesn't have land doesn't have to be ol leregel. So the Gemara is going to say that later on in this parak. Someone who doesn't have land doesn't have to be ol leregel. So good, he doesn't have to come Shavuos time and Sukkos time. What about Korban Pesach? How does he not bring a Korban Pesach? If you don't have karka, that's not a patur from Korban Pesach. So says the Tzlach, Korban Pesach, you're potter if you're Bederach Rechoka. If Erev Pesach comes and you're very far away from Yerushalayim, so what are you supposed to do? You can't be beamed into Yerushalayim. There's no Concorde that flies. What are you going to do? You can't get there in time. So you can't bring Korban Pesach. It's on us. What are you supposed to do? So the Minchas Kinyan says, what are you talking about? It's not like you didn't know the Pesach was coming. You knew that every year on Erev Pesach you have to bring Korban Pesach. How do you wake up Erev Pesach in the morning and say, Nebuch, I'm so far away from Yerushalayim, I guess I can't bring Korban Pesach. So book a ticket a couple of weeks in advance, get to Yerushalayim, and then you'll be able to bring a Korban Pesach. So Minchas Chinuch and the Tzlach apparently have a machlokas. To what extent does a person have to put himself in a situation where he'll be able to do a mitzvah in advance? Meaning, do we say, the Zman mitzvah is Erev Pesach, so when do you have to start thinking about it? When Erev Pesach comes, start thinking about it. See if you're in a position to do the mitzvah. Or do we say, no, in advance a person needs to plan out to make sure that he's going to be in a position to do the mitzvah. Let's say I know that the town I live in doesn't have a shofar, but there's another town, a couple of towns over, that has a shofar. Do I have to make travel plans? Do I have to make plans for Yontif to go to that town to be able to yotze the mitzvah of Tkiyah Shofar? The Chayyadim is the Mesupuk about this. To what extent does a person, we know for money how much you have to spend. I'm Vaziz Ali Vaziz Yosu Michomesh. But how much effort do you have to go to leave one's home in order to put himself in a position to do a mitzvah? Let's do one more story. Rav Kana Chalash. Rav Kana got sick once. Shadur Rabban Rav Shur B'Reid Ravidi. The Rabban sent Rav Shur B'Reid Ravidi to check up on him. Amar Le Zil B'Dok Ma'idine. Go see how he's doing. Asa Ashkei D'Nach Nafshei. He went and he saw that by the time he got there, he was dead. So Kari L'Vushei V'Ahadrei L'Kari L'Achorei. So he tore his clothing and he put the kriya toward his back so that when he came back home, people wouldn't see right away that he was wearing a beged karua. If they would see that, it would be very depressing. And he came back very sad and crying. They said, did he die? I don't want to say. So someone who spreads bad words, who spreads bad news, is a ksil, is considered to be a fool, so he didn't want to say. This is all part of speaking in a refined way, is also not to speak about negative things, and we express it in other ways. Okay.